Thank you for coming, everyone. We're excited to see so many faces, so many Midgar veterans as well. My name is Anna. I am the Birth Network Vice President, and this is Dr. Kim Gambino, who is our president. We're going to share a little bit about what's going on with San Diego Birth Network and then bring up our speakers for the day. If anyone hasn't been to our events before, we try to hold monthly socials like this, and we try to hold them throughout the county, so around. We have events happening all through this next year scheduled, and if any of you are members currently and you're interested in speaking at one of our events, please come up to one of the board members afterwards and let us know. We're looking to keep, in the past we've had lots of different providers speak at our socials, but in this next year our goal is really education. We're trying to bring in more of the public. So we're trying to keep our socials for the next year very topical. So we have a list of hot topics. If there's something that you're really passionate about that you think isn't being spoken about and you want to get, you know, to send out that message, please let us know. We're happy to have you. If you are a birth professional and you're not currently a member, come up to one of us afterwards and talk about, we can tell you about all the benefits it is for becoming a member, and we have a discount for those of you who are here today. Anything else? Kim has anything else to share? Okay. Is that it?
That's it for the technical part.
That's my spiel.
Yes. So Anna is our admin and vice president, and she's a godsend because I'm more of the, well, not that she's not like this. Her heart is 100% in it, but she can actually physically get things done. On the other side of it, I'm the visionary. I'm the dreamer. I'm the one who goes, oh my gosh, I just want this to happen. And how do we pull people together to make it happen? And how I got involved in the San Diego Birth Network is I was moving from West Virginia to San Diego and ended up in a homeless girl's birth, which I didn't even know her name. She called me. I showed up. Didn't even know her name through the whole birth. Just talked to her just about how beautiful it was. And my husband and I had three unassisted home births. So, you know, I was just in love with the process. And I had no midwifery training, no doula training, no training. I just knew it was beautiful and just kept getting in her space and allow her to be in that. Because when I showed up, when she called me and had my number, which I didn't even know who she was, well, I kind of remembered meeting her. It was about a 9-hour process, and through that she had asked for epidural and asked for an epidural, and I just kept talking to her and just, you know, being with her. And then finally at the end she's like, I don't care, I want one. And I was like, oh my god, I don't even know her name, who am I, my beliefs on her, this is crazy, it's 2:30 in the morning. And then the nurse who came in every hour and a half, do you want an epidural? Do you want an epidural? And I was like, isn't it right there? It says no epidural, no epidural. And every, she kept coming in and kept coming in. And she was just adamant. And finally, the girl said, all right. And she goes, well, honey, let me check your dilation first. Because she hadn't checked since I'd been there. So she checked and, oh, you're 10 centimeters. And she was super excited. And I was like, wait a minute, Nurse Ratchet. To this woman who's like, you know, all nice. And then within an hour, the baby was coming out, first push. And, you know, I'm just hanging out because still they don't know where I belong in this. Second push, the doc pulls on the baby's head and the baby's born. Now, as a chiropractor, because I'm a chiropractor, you know, if it would have been an hour and a half in, I would have been like, just be gentle, easy, easy. I had no idea at the second push that the baby was going to be pulled out. And baby was born. I personally wanted to check him right then, but because at that time I didn't have a license in hospital privileges, I waited until I came in the next morning, and he was like this. He was like this. And it took about 6 weeks for the baby's head to be back up, and I was like, oh my gosh, if this happens in a good natural birth, what happens in the other births? Mm. So I got online, and this was 2012, and I was going nuts, and I was meeting every person. I called every person that had any birth thing online in San Diego, and they kept saying San Diego Birth Network already has this going on, and you know, they're pulling people together. And I was like, I don't know, because I couldn't find it. There was no meetings, and at that time Jerry, we had just started the school and she was super busy, and they were having an event once a year. So finally I waited and came to the event. and then she's like, why don't you come to the board meeting? So I ended up at the board meeting, and within 6 months she's like, I need time because we're going through a reaccreditation period, and can you take over as president? And I was like, what I'm doing? She's like, you know what, you know, meaning I knew in my heart what I wanted to do, and I wanted to do it 4 years prior because I wanted to unite the chiropractors because we have more, I don't want to say power, but we have physical businesses. You know, people look up to us because we're doctors, you know, even though that most of the women in here know more than a lot of doctors. So if we can get some established group and the birthing community together and create a larger community, that was the vision for San Diego Birth Network. And so that's been happening. So we started with a 3-year vision, and now we're on a 5-year vision. The first year was get the website down and establish our board, because when you have a transition in board, you lose it. And we lost a couple people, and so we're doing this again. And it's really nice not to do that, so we can put things on top of us, because the foundation of San Diego Birth Network is the board members. You know, we are here to support you in any way that we can. So that was our first and second year. Our third year was to do the socials. And so that was last year. It's pretty, we got it down for the most part. So this is our second year. We have all of 2018 lined up. For anyone who's interested in 2019, let us know. We'll put you on the calendar. We love to go to physical locations, and then we're gonna have different providers. Also, our fourth year is our year that we go out to the public. And this is the real thing that we've been waiting for. It's like, yes. So farmers markets, Earth Day, Birth Without Fear, we were at last month. So we're working on those couple of positions to be filled, outreach coordinator, so we can have the set up. I love hanging out. It's funny because we get here and we just talk, and you can't like get a word in, and you're like, time's up and you have to go. Well, if we do these outreach together, we're gonna be hanging out Earth Day all day together. So I get to know everything about you and all about your, you know, I mean, it's cool, I love that. And then that way we get to build community within our own community. And the next thing we're doing with the socials in year four is that we're going to start asking more of the providers to bring one person that's not a provider. And, you know, someone who's interested in birth, who may be pregnant. And even though that this is geared more toward us as providers, I always learn something. I'm blown away with what everyone is sharing and speaking about. So one of the things that we're going to ask is we will be sending out a flyer for each social. Print that flyer and give it to your people, okay? So that's what, and I know new routines are kind of tough, so once we get that, I think it'll grow and grow and grow, so we'll have more lay people here. And then year five, originally, we were wanting to educate, but what we found is that fourth trimester, there's a very big need for that. So we're gonna focus on fourth trimester next year. And then our idea is to continue the outreach, and so each thing that we build on each year, we just keep adding a thing and hopefully stabilizing, not changing the thing we have too much, because when there's change, it requires a lot of energy to, so we keep building on that. And then so our sixth year, we'll be going out to education to younger women and
keep getting younger. Like second graders, who do we need to get to? Yes.
Babies. So so we have two speakers today. We have a midwifery group that's here beside Nozoni, and then we also have the presenter who is over in Nozoni, which is Claudia. I think she seems to like to stay in the background a little bit. So let's start with Claudia first, and then we'll have Jerry come up afterwards. So this is Claudia. She is now the, would you say, what's your title?
Executive Director.
Executive Director.
Sounds fancy.
It is fancy.
So I have notes because I am so passionate about midwifery and midwifery education that I'll go off on a tangent and not say anything I need to say. So forgive me. So I have been the Executive Director since Jerry turned it over to me in September, yeah. And it's still my dream job. I'm still everything. Like, I can't believe I work here. This is so awesome. We're the only MEEC-accredited 3-year midwifery program that has been approved by the California Bureau of Private Post-Secondary Education and the Medical Board of California. That's in California. And we've been accredited since 2009. But you probably all know Jerry and have all heard the history, and she's a better person to talk to because she started it. We would not be here without her. Let's see. So Our students graduate with a diploma in holistic midwifery, and our CPMs upon graduation and eligible to apply for licensure as a California licensed midwife. We have been approved to, for our students who are service people or like children of service people, they can get funds through the VA to attend here. We've been approved for the I-20 visa, which would allow us to take students from Canada and Mexico without getting, you know, without them having to go through the visa process. But we've been approved, but they've told us it will take up to 18 months for them to finish whatever bureaucratic stuff they do so that we can actually take these students. And we've also started looking into being approved by FAFSA so that we can take federal grant money, but that is not going to be any faster. there are multiple hoops to jump through before you can even start applying. So, let's see. So today, we have about 35 students who are in the academic portion of the program. Like I said, it's a three-year program. We have yearly cohorts. Our freshman class is very big. We have about 16, and then we have 9 and 10 in our junior and senior cohort. We also have students after they graduate from the academic portion and are working on their clinical portion, they're still considered students. They're kind of like alumni students. And there's about 18 of them. And this month, or January, one of our graduates got her California license, and in December, two did. So we're turning out midwives. Yay. Yay. Yay! So let's see. Okay, so for these students who are in the limbo between they're not coming here for classes, but they can't take their exam and they can't practice, and so they're still student midwives, we are implementing Graduate Skills Days, and Graduate Skills Days, so that they can come in and work on skills, and also study days, so that they keep that academic knowledge fresh and can practice taking tests and prepare for the exam, which isn't a hard exam, but it does take work to know how to navigate it. Let's see. An ongoing project is that's spearheaded by one of these alumni graduates is opening a low cost prenatal and well woman clinic here. We keep getting like dreaming bigger and bigger and bigger, and then have to go back and like, okay, but wait, first we have to. So we're working on that, and then I have been talking to a midwife in Los Angeles about opening a birth center together and potentially putting a classroom in there so that LA students who are from LA don't have to make the drive. My thought is maybe having a junior year in LA, right? So these are all long-term things. The big project right now is working on the curriculum. It needs to be updated and moved around. I am really committed to teaching midwives the latest in evidence-based care and the latest research and the latest tests and devices and tools and things. But I'm also You know, the midwifery model of care has been proven over and over, and recently in a large study based on the MANA Statistics Project, which is the national organization. It's the North American Registry of Midwives. No, wait, sorry, MANA Stats. So the Midwives Alliance of North America has a statistics project with over 100,000 home births or out of hospital births and clients. So so a lot of studies are being done from that. And there are huge, so the birth statistics, the maternal mortality and infant mortality rates in this country are crazy high. Amnesty International has called it a human rights violation. We're the only nation whose infant deaths, or no, maternal mortality numbers are rising rather than falling. We are, babies in the U.S. are three times more likely to die as infants than any of the other wealthy nations in the world. And we are 26 out of 29 developed countries. We have beat out Lithuania, Romania, and Latvia. Yeah, yes. So, this is terrible. And women of color, particularly black women, are three times more likely to die, 3 to 4 times more likely to die as a result of pregnancy and birth. And their babies are dying at the same rate over white women and white babies. So a big push that the midwifery community is making is to increase access for students of color and increase the cultural sensitivity and awareness of midwives. So one of the things that is happening is there is a scholarship for midwifery students of color. And the goal is to have every midwifery school sponsor one student of color per year with a full ride scholarship. Well, we can't do that. But what we can do is, out of our pool of applicants, there's always somebody who just can't afford it. And rather than send them away, they'll still have to pay their fees and their living expenses and their books and all of that. But we do have room for one student of color every year to receive that scholarship. So I am very happy to say that our freshman class is incredibly diverse. We have multiple students of color, black students, Asian students, Mexican students. We have an Iranian midwife who is in our advanced placement process. So that's really exciting. But so I wasn't looking at my notes and I got off on a tangent. let's see. So, excellence in education, right? So the midwifery model has been proven time and again to not only improve the mortality rates and outcomes with mothers and babies, but to completely erase the racial disparities. Midwifery care works. And midwifery care is not, you'll get the sister, prenatal care. But to increase the technology is not increasing midwifery care. So along with learning about all the latest testing and technologies, I want our students to come out of here grounded in the midwifery model of care, which starts with normal. It's all normal. Awesome. And yes, we need to learn about the things that can happen, because this is not a perfect world, and not every birth stays normal. But normal is a range. And
Within that range, there's leeway. So my goal is that all of our students come out of here confident in knowing the range of normal, at what point as you move out of the normal range, or as you're approaching the edges, do you watch? And at what point do you start doing things? And then at what point do you start... I have language here. and then knowing how to prepare for what could happen because you're watching warning signs. And, you know, like, okay, so maybe you want to bring the oxygen closer to the bed, or maybe you want to tell your students that this is likely to happen and this is how it will be handled. And then at what point do you say, you know, the chances that we're going to need medical intervention are great enough that we should be where that is, which is the hospital. So that we're not just teaching people the technical skills of taking care of pregnant ladies and catching babies, but those hand skills and the awareness skills and the intuitive skills of knowing how to keep moms within normal and keep them safe. And know when it's beyond what we know how to do or what we can do. Let's see. So we have this grand challenge. We have a GoFundMe page that is for our scholarships. And so I encourage you all to go on our Facebook page and you'll find links to it there. Some wonderful person signed us up to be in PayPal's charitable giving program, and we keep getting checks from them, which is totally awesome. So we're listed with them, so if you're buying things using PayPal, I really don't know how it works, but you can make it so Nijoni gets money.
Amazon Smile also.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, Amazon Smile. So do people have questions? Yes.
I'm just curious as to how one might sign up or volunteer to participate in the midwifery studies that are happening. I'm pregnant.
Great.
I'm planning a home birth with my second daughter. I already had one, but I would love to add data if that's possible.
Your midwife probably takes part in that step. You can ask her. If not, it's practice based. So if your midwife doesn't participate in anastats, you won't be in that.
But you could encourage her to do
yes.
that.
Yes. and we're investing in. Nana is investing in infrastructure, so Manistats will have greater capacity. And that's a new thing that just came up. Anything else? Anybody else? People had lots of questions while I was showing you around, so let's see, what did I miss? Okay, so I think that was everything that I had on my list that I wanted to talk about. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Claudia had shared with us when we were at a chiropractic office over in Pacific Beach, and when she had went through her list of, all the things that she's done through the years, it was amazing. So she seems kind of quiet, you know, compared to me, but she's the one of those that just gets things done and is on purpose and just constantly going, as you can tell, because she's got all these projects. And, you know, all of us who have our own businesses, we know that it's a process. You know, if you don't look at it every day, it's 3 years later and you're like, darn it, wanted to start that. So thank you for taking over. Yes. Our next presenter is an amazing woman. The first time I heard her speak, It was, you know, there's just some people that you just melt and you're just like, oh my gosh, they have just such an open heart. And I didn't really know too much about her. And then I started learning about her and I heard about her in multiple births and how she's been very grounding and stable for so many people. And her personality is more of a caring, giving personality. And for the, probably the last, from my understanding, probably the last 15, 20 years, she put the admin hat on to do it, as we women do. And we don't, you know, necessarily, we don't all thrive in those different spaces, but we do what we need to do to get the job done. You know, not only women, men too. We have a lot of men here, so thank you for all the men that are attending. And she's created a lot of stuff, and from, she's going back to what her heart's been calling her, and I want to thank her for all the work that she's done. So I want you to welcome Jerry.
A lot to live up to. I'm not sure I can quite do that. But I want to also say that I just want to correct a couple of things. So I was one of the co-founders of Nozomi Institute. Marla Hicks was the one who came up with the idea. About a year into that process, she dragged me into it, saying, oh, you can teach midwifery school. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm still really new. And she's like, no, I got to go back to work so you get to do this. And I was like, okay, but I'm a business head. So for me, looking at the red, it was just like, oh, no, we can't function like this. We need to do something. So I would like to say that our first graduating class consisted of two, and they were both midwives of color. Our next graduating class graduated four people, and one of them was midwives of color, so 25%. So Nozomi has always, always valued that. We cannot work in communities where we don't understand them in depth. And so to create midwives or to help midwives come into their own space and to care for their families is so much more than somebody else just saying, oh, hey, I can take care of all women. No, you can't. And it takes humility on our part to be able to recognize that we need more people in the various communities to really provide the services that those communities deserve and want. So midwifery is an amazing process. And so my entry into teaching midwifery was kind of like, oh, wow, go hit the books and learn all this stuff. And I have to say that I am absolutely thrilled to have Claudia. I've known Claudia for many, many years ago. She actually was the president of CAM, the California Association of Midwives, for many years. And she kind of got slipped into that because she wasn't at a meeting, as she tells it. And so they elected her. But she did some amazing things here in the state of California for midwives in terms of helping us get lab accounts that would give us a discount. In San Diego, we've never had a problem setting up our lab accounts and sending people in for ultrasounds. Most of the state does not have the benefit of that. So she was very instrumental in getting those things going. And it was also at a time when we were working on the legislative process in changing the law to allow midwives to be primary care providers and not be physician extenders. That didn't happen, but the process went well along so that the next person coming in picked it up and worked with that. So as of 3 years ago, we are no longer physician extenders. We're considered primary care providers for the state of California. And that has allowed midwives to, number one, to be able to have access to things in the past that we couldn't always have. So, and this particular organization, San Diego Birth Network, was a dream of mine. And back in 1997, I was the first doula to get certified in San Diego. And I just felt like we needed a place for doulas to come together and to continue get education and to connect with providers in the community who are mother-baby friendly. Because we would go to births and we would come back and just like, oh, this didn't work well and this provider and this hospital. And it was like, no, we need a place, a one-stop place that families can come to and know that if their care providers, whomever they are members of this or are connected with this, they're gonna get good service. They're gonna get mother-baby-friendly services. So they're gonna look at them as a family, not just as one more cog in the wheel.
Mm-hmm. And so that was founded in 1997. We were the first organization in the nation to be nonprofit as a birth network. There were two or three other birth networks prior to that, but my goal was to make it nonprofit. I didn't want it to be a place about money. And so to see how it's grown over 21 years coming up in September is pretty amazing. And to see all of you and in your communities and in the type of care that you provide, bringing access to families to know that their choices matter. It's not about what the care provider thinks. It's not about somebody telling them how they need to have their baby, much less parent their baby. You know, you all are touching families every single day, and you help them come to the heart, which is, I know how to raise my baby. I know what I want for my baby. I don't need somebody over here in my head telling me that I'm not doing a good job. And so for me to see where this has gone and to see care providers coming in, and I love the 5-year plan, let's get back out into the community. I mean, this has just been amazing. And you know, Kim sitting there in that board meeting going, wow, this is really cool. And I'm like, yeah, so are you. And I think, I'm going to get you in here. And, I get out. And so, you know, so that's how it happened. It's but really what I want to talk to you today about is midwifery care and why midwifery care is the gold standard. You know, we're one of the few nations in the world that does not have midwifery care as the primary care for all women. So we had a British student back a few years ago, and he was a male. He was a nurse from Britain. It's very common to have male midwives in Britain. All midwifery care is done by midwives, and OBs practice only in the hospital, and they're only for emergencies. They're only for, uh-oh, something's going downhill now, we better do something. The midwife still is the primary care provider. The OB steps in, does whatever they need to do, and then the care is handed back to the midwife. And that's very common. So he came to the States, he was a labor and delivery nurse up in Orange County, and I remember when he came and interviewed in terms of taking schooling, we were concerned because he was a man. And we were concerned that he might not be able to find a clinical practice. So we discussed it in depth, and we just said, we would love to have you in the program. However, we don't know how open your area is. And he said, no worry, I work in the hospital, I know doctors, I know midwives, they're gonna let me in. I've already talked with some of them. And we're like, okay, great. So he came into the school, he was here for about a year and a half. In that year and a half, every single door he approached was shut. And so he ended up dropping out of school, continuing his labor and delivery practice until he decided to move back to Britain and pick up his midwifery school there. So there's all kinds of discrimination, you know, whether it's gender, whether it's race, whether it's biology, whatever. And midwifery care really transcends all of that because we look at each individual as an individual, each family as a family. What are their needs? What do they want? What kind of care can we provide them? And that is what makes the difference. We come to know our clients really well. We care what they want. We want to help them achieve that if at all possible. We know that the woman knows her body better than we're ever going to know. We trust that she's going to tell us when things are going on with it so that we can help make those adjustments that Claudia mentioned. Sometimes pregnancy, sometimes birth goes out of the range of normal. Our training is to help get it back into that range. And there's a lot of things we use. We use nutrition. Ooh, what a concept. Keep people healthy by eating. We use sometimes herbs, homeopathy. We certainly encourage our families to have complementary care. So we're talking massage, chiropractic, cranial sacral. What have I missed?
Acupuncture.
All of those things are part of keeping us healthy and keeping the family focused on driving their own health care, right? So those are all really important factors. So we listen to our families, we see what is their plan, how can we augment that, how can we help support them, and then what are the underlying things? So yes, we do medical testing, we like to get labs. In my practice, I really like to have that obstetrical ultrasound. I wanna make sure this baby structurally is conducive of having a home birth. If not, then let's make sure that this family has the best care they can, but birth in a place where the emergent type of
equipment and providers are that baby might need. So as we go through our midwifery care with families, generally their visits are an hour in length. We sit down with the family every time they come. They usually will come in with nutritional things. We discuss any concerns they may have. Social issues are huge. What's going on in their family? Mm-hmm. You know, has somebody lost a job? Do they have food to eat? Are their children sick? Those things are very huge in underlying a healthy pregnancy. So if those things are not being addressed, what resources in the community can we help connect them with? And then helping that family find what's for them. So it's not about us telling them what to do. It's a collaborative effort. In fact, Heather LeMaster is my midwifery partner. She's also my daughter, so second generation midwife. And we kind of laughingly tell people who come and interview us, we call ourselves the concierge midwives. We do, because you tell me what kind of care you want to have, and let's see how we can structure that for you. And so an hour visit, we set up their next visit. Our families come in, they're given a binder, probably a 3-inch binder with most of the information that they need or that come up usually in the course of a pregnancy. And really, it's not information from us to them. It's more of, let's get them thinking. Let's have them do their own research and then come back and let's discuss it. Oh, you know that GTT, that glucose tolerance test, or that GBS swab that's done at 36, 37 weeks and nobody really tells you what that is, and just if it comes back positive, here's all the things you're going to have to do. No, let's have them educate themselves ahead of time. Do they feel like they're at risk for it? Do we feel like they're at risk for it? And we discuss those options. They choose to do the test or to not do the test, and we document that. So the goal really is to have the family be in the driver's seat and have them delineate the type of care, and then have us provide the resources or encourage them in the directions they might need to go. And I'm totally on board with what Claudia said. Evidence-based is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, I have clients that will come in and they'll go, hey, what do you think about that study? And I'm like, oh, what study? I haven't heard that study. And they'll tell me about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, okay, that's really interesting. And then we go in and we do our research on it, because it's important for us to stay up on what's happening, on the new things, as Claudia said, new equipment, that doesn't replace what's in here. There are times that in the course of a birth, you see things moving in a certain way, and you just know X, Y, Z if we don't do something. And sometimes the mom doesn't want to do that something, and that's okay, that's her choice. So as a care provider, it's our responsibility then to be prepared and to know when we need to make a change. And by spending that kind of time with your client, what you find is they come to trust you, that in the course of the birth itself, if there's a medical decision that needs to be made quickly, they trust you know what's going to be best for them. And we discuss it. We never make a decision for our family. So midwifery care is really, truly collaborative care. When you have a family that's taking responsibility for their healthcare choices, they make much better decisions because you're the one who's on board, not them. So, and this is something that I feel is really missing in overall obstetric care in our nation. Mm-hmm. I think the other aspect of midwifery care that really is a gold standard is our postpartum care for our families. So, you know, when you birth at home, which we specialize in home birth, we specialize in water birth, when you birth at home, the care provider's coming to you. So we come in, we bring all this equipment, these big bags, most of which we never have to use, but we have it just in case. And it's all there and ready. We have the birth, and then we stay usually 2 to 4 hours postpartum, and we make sure that mom and baby are both stable, that baby's had a good breastfeed, that mom has been able to get up and use the bathroom, and that she feels comfortable and stable. We have her have a nice warm meal, tuck them into bed and say, okay, we're going to call you in 12 hours. If anything comes up in the meantime, call us. So in 12 hours, we call, we touch base. Okay, here's all the things we told you to, you know, this is norm. Is there anything out of that? What else is going on? Who's eating? Who's sleeping? How many pees and poops? All of those kind of things. And then we say, okay, we're going to see you again on usually 24 to 36 hours after the birth. So that's us coming to the family. We come again on day 3 or 4. For our first-time mommies, we typically are going to see them also at home on day 7, because that's when lactation issues might be a problem. So we want to nip all of this in the bud immediately and help her have the resources. And we may not have all the answers. We might have to bring in a lactation consultant. She may have somebody she's already contracted with. But again, it's that team effort. We see our families again at home on day 14. So now we've had usually 3 to 5 home visits in that first 2 weeks postpartum. And I think that's huge. All of our families, all of our mamas go through a postpartum mood and anxiety disorder screening prenatally, usually about 4 weeks before they have the baby. We do it again usually at about 2 to 3 weeks, and then we do it again at the end of their care. So our care with the family doesn't end until usually around 8 weeks or sometimes 12. So they come back into the office usually at 4, 6, and 8 weeks postpartum. If we're doing a postpartum PAP or well woman exam, we usually don't do that until 8 weeks, because at 6 weeks it's a little early for most mamas. And sometimes those results will come back and they're not accurate, but they may be off. Now mom's worried about this for the next 3 months, so why don't we just wait 2 weeks and do it at 8 weeks? So really our care is about overseeing what's normal during that entire year of pregnancy and postpartum. And I love that SBBM is going to pick up on the fourth trimester, because so much happens. A woman in the hospital, she's seen by the care staff the first 2 days. She usually is then told to go to the pediatrician, maybe on day 3 or 4 for a weight check, usually certainly by 2 weeks for another weight check, and then she's not going to see the peds until 6 weeks. She's not going to see her OB at all from the time she leaves the hospital until 6 weeks. And oh my goodness, there's so much that can go missing in that 6 week period, and that's a problem. You know, we are one of the nations that have the highest postpartum mood and anxiety disorder in the world. A few years ago, there was a conference in Italy, and the Italian doctors thought it was ridiculous, you know, but they hosted it. And it's like, how can people be so depressed after they have a baby? We don't have any depression here. And of course, the American care providers are like, well, no, it's just because you're not screening very well. and the Italian doctors are like, no, you don't understand. We screen and we don't have this problem.
Yeah.
So the American doctors were like, well, why do you think that is? Well, because they have families, because they have villages, because it's not a mom and a partner and a baby, and everybody's trying to figure out, what do I do? There's a whole village around them that come in and help take care of. There's the aunties, the cousins, the grandmas. And so it's approached in a much more reasonable fashion. And that's another big piece of what's missing here in maternity care. So it's no wonder that we have the outcomes that we do, and there's not going to be changes until women are cared for as individuals, not as a group, not as another cog in the wheel. And one remedy does not cover every single person. So that's what midwifery care is about. And we think that every woman should be offered, every woman deserves it, and every woman should have access to it. And that's what I have to say. And I can go on.
So I'm so happy to hear that they're recognizing midwifery as
primary care.
Are you finding that the hospital interaction and the insurance companies are on board with this too, or is that the next kind of?
Excellent question. I will say that transfer to hospital has certainly gotten easier, and I will say that hospitals are now required to submit a report for every transfer that's done. So I that's certainly a question that goes both ways. So I think it's really incumbent on the midwifery community to have better communication. And I will say that most of the Nijomi graduates and a lot of the midwives practicing in the community use electronic charting. So our charts are readily available. We are required by law to facilitate the transfer, to accompany the transfer, to give report to the care provider who's taking it on. Most midwives will stay there unless it looks like it's going to be long and drawn out, and then they typically will have somebody in the team, usually it might be a student, stay there as the doula and then call the midwife. Well, the way Heather and I work it is one of us stays, or
the student calls us when the birth is getting close so that we actually are there. And then we pick up all the postpartum care as if they had birthed at home. So as soon as they're released from the hospital, we pick up their care and continue on. So I would say that in Heather, in my instance, we haven't had negative transfers for some time. It's not to say that once in a while you don't get somebody who's having an off day and they're not very happy. That happens. But I think overall, it's viewed more positive. They get the records. They see, oh, look, you test for the things we do. Oh, you even chart. You know, so it's given them a little bit more of a professional viewpoint. And it's not to say that we don't still have hurdles. We do. Sometimes we get turned away from hospitals. And sometimes it's by physician. So we have a couple of physicians that we work regularly with. And we, if we need to transfer, we will call one of them at one of the hospitals and say, okay, here's what we've got. We'd like to transfer in. If that physician is not on staff that day, they will get back with us. They'll go, let me see who's in. And they will call us back and go, nope, don't come here. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, thank you. And that was just as valuable a piece of information. Yeah. So we'll go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think it's getting better. I think, you know, of course, we always have a long ways to go. You know, anytime one field feels like they're being endangered by taking away some of their income, even if it's a minuscule piece of it, you know, there's a lot of defenses that go up. But the more that we all can work together, the more we move things forward, and it becomes, this is the norm. And I have to say, it's amazing to me to see young families who are having their first baby now be the ones who largely are choosing midwifery care. They're educating themselves, and they're saying, oh no, I don't have to have the train wreck first. I know the data, I can see the studies. I want the gold standard initially. Insurance companies, if it's a PPO plan, in most cases, midwives can get reimbursed. And I will say, really, the client gets reimbursed because the client pays the midwife, and then we are happy to file the paperwork, and then they get the reimbursement from their insurance, because that typically is supposed to happen within 60 days. It doesn't always, but for us, they can put us off a year, year and a half before we receive payment. So HMOs, no. There's absolutely no remuneration from HMOs. However, those are great because we can send the client in to get their labs at their HMO and not have the fee for that. And transfer is real easy when they have an HMO because they're in the system, and so you just go in and they get very good care.
As a doula, I like to spin that as co-care.
Yes. Gina.
Question kind of along the lines of what you say, primary care, but like working as a community together, like, you know, educating the family and the community. Does, and this might be for Claudia, she's kind of in charge of Mazzoni. Do Mazzoni have a time with the midwives with the outside providers, whether it's an acupuncturist, chiropractor, you know, doula, or, you know, other specialty, come in and educate the students on what they do so that the students kind of know, you know, because I know for me, like, it wasn't until I got out of chiropractic and really was like, I love kids and that's going to be my specialty, but then going out and taking it myself to learn about midwifery, like in my own home birth, or but, you know, like, what do those other providers do that can help my clients? So when they ask me about it, I'm like, whether I know a few to refer to, or at least I can tell them, like, yes, this is a positive impact here to the San Diego Birth Network, and you can find them.
Got it.
Okay. So I want to be clear that I walked into all this awesomeness and that, I mean, you made me look really good because this school is so amazing. I could just walk in and everything was in place.
Thank you.
Anyway. So in our curriculum, we have a module on traditional Chinese medicine. We have a module on nutrition. We have a module. We do a lot of that. And there are midwives in the community who are teaching the classes. So, you know, when we're talking about prenatal care, we talk about all of the things that can make pregnancy better for someone, like going to the chiropractor, like homeopathy, and what else? Like,
so we have an herbal module, mm-hmm. an entire month spent on herbology, right. which they don't come out as herbalists, they just understand how can it be used. Same thing with homeopathy, traditional Chinese medicine, which introduces them to the idea as well as acupuncture. As far as chiropractic itself, we don't have a module about that, but we definitely incorporate that into several of the modules. And we have really amazing students, and those students are connected to their communities. Mm-hmm. And their midwives that they're precepting with, all of them encourage complementary care. And so they're usually experiencing that not just here, but I would say even more primarily in their clinical setting with the preceptors.
Isn't one of the prerequisites before you even sign up to be a certified doula or to take a doula training as well?
Yes, so we used to encourage our students to take certain classes, and now they are required. For the last 2-3 years now, I think they're required. So they're required to take a doula training, because let's face it, if you're going to be a midwife, you better know how to support emotionally and physically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It also helps them have a jump ahead in that they're already experiencing births. They know what birth looks like. It also helps them take care of one of their clinical requirements, which is to have 10 observations, which means, in most cases, doing it. It doesn't just mean standing there and watching. It means doing something. So yes, they're required to have that, as well as anatomy and physiology, microbiology, and medical terminology prior to starting the school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I just wanted to give a personal spin. I had an Izzoni midwife at my shepherd.
Yay.
I love her dearly, and I think
she's amazing
right now.
Yay!
So, and she was great. Oh my gosh, she was great.
And I think to date, we have licensed, I know we've licensed at least 30, but I lost count, so I don't know since, but I think we're up to 32 licensed midwives who have graduated from the school and are practicing.
Wow.
So 2 of our students are in the state of Washington. We have a couple in Utah. We have some who've moved up to Northern California.
One has a birth center in Africa.
Yeah, one has a birth center
wow.
in Africa.
Wow.
A couple of others have birth centers. One has a birth center here, or one of our original graduates. So it's, you know, to see that progression and to see the growth of it is phenomenal. And it is changing the future.
Yeah. Jerry, never heard about CoCare before, so I think that's really awesome. I think in a perfect world, in a chiropractic practice, all the moms that find you would be in the midwifery model of care. I don't plan on being a midwife, but I am very, very interested in normal. And so what would you say are the best resources for, you know, like for me, I mean, I have a mom that I saw today, you know, and I don't work on Saturdays, but it's like, okay, like, hospital birth, et cetera, et cetera. Educate about amniotic fluid and mm-hmm. accuracies and whatnot. But I'm curious if you know any like really good resources that, you know, providers could have. That if like, hey, this is what your OB is saying. Maybe CoCare is a really good option right now because mm-hmm. you actually might be in the range of normal. You know,
right.
Is there anything?
So. I can think of a ton of things.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna give you a very simplistic
sure, of course.
Idea. So books are old.
Yeah.
Because by the time they're printed and they're distributed, the information is old. However, I'm gonna tell you that one of the books that's probably one of the older midwifery books is called Heart and Hands. And it's a book that anybody can read. It's basic midwifery information about what is normal. And it gets updated about every 3 to 5 years. So I think that's one that you can at least use as a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
There's evidence-based birth
yep.
website
yep.
is going to keep you up on the latest things that are coming out in terms of studies and very well-researched
mm-hmm.
information. Claudia, what do you have to add? I'll hold that for a sec. Go ahead and think about it. Another one is childbirthconnection.org.
Mm-hmm.
That's written for the consumer, but the reality is that is the oldest birthing organization in the U.S. They used to be the maternity center way back in the day in New York, and they had a birth center, and they were some of the first to distribute information. They've been around for over 100 years. So they went digital, changed their name, The birth center was no longer supported by physicians, so that happens also.
Mm-hmm.
But also just really turning your clients on to some of those resources. They do their own research, and all of a sudden they figure out, oh, I'm getting a song and mm-hmm. dance. This is not really true.
I'm sorry, can you say this one more time?
Childbirthconnection.org.
Okay.
Evidence-based birth.
Science and Sensibilities, another good one.
Yes,
really
Lamaze has Science
really
and Sensibilities, and they're always looking at the research and saying, okay, what's new?
What was that one?
Science and Sensibility. It's by Lamaze.
Okay.
ICANN, International Cesarean Awareness Network, is really keyed in on mamas who in the past have had a cesarean and are attempting to have a vaginal birth after cesarean. And I will say that one of the most recent studies that I saw showed on our MANA stats, which I've contributed to since the day I became a midwife, the midwifery model of care, I believe our current VBAC rate is about 80%.
Wow.
Huge, yes. And it's because we listen to women. Listening to women is another. Listening to women is two different studies that came out. They're about, I think they're 5 to 7 years apart. Dr. Eugene DeClercq, who is a statistician and what is his specialty? He's out of Boston, University of Boston. But that's an excellent resource because what they did was they studied all these women who had different births, who had births that, you know, the hospitals reported this, and what they did was they went to the women. And they're like, okay, so you women, you're all requesting cesareans? And of the women who, on their medical records, requested a cesarean, never requested a cesarean. They were informed that maybe they might need a cesarean, but they didn't ask for it. And so what they started doing was delving into that data and going, okay, so what the establishment is saying versus what the women are saying are two very different things. And so the initial study came up with a lot of things that you're just kind of shocked about. And so I think it was 5 years later they did the study again, and they were getting kind of the same results. Women were being informed that their physician would do such and such, and when they got there for the birth, the physician's like, oh no, I don't do that. You know, so that was more consumer-based. But that's a good resource also, especially for families.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, what do you guys teach breech birth or breech vaginal birth?
So that's a really good question. So when the law changed and said that now we're primary, you know, care providers, we had to give up some things. Mm-hmm. So midwives learn about breech birth. We learn about twin birth. In the past, it was legal for us to do those things. It's no longer legal for us to practice that. But do the students learn? Absolutely. Because not everybody's going to practice in the state of California. And those things are still legal in most of the other states. So, yes, breech is a variation of normal. You know, some babies just decide to hit the ground running. That's just how they are. And respecting that is important. But also having a care provider who knows how to work with that is hugely important. In fact, we have one of the Nijoni graduates, who was in the first class, Nicole Morales, is actually the top, she's one of the top midwives of two in the nation about breech birth.
Wow.
And we have her as a resource here.
She teaches the breech module here.
Spinning
babies.
She teaches spinning babies. Wow. If you ever get a chance to go to her workshops, please do. So spinning babies is another one.
And she good started breech birth San Diego too, I think, right? There's a website, breech birth San Diego.
Yes, yeah, she did. Claudia.
I would like to bring up the, speaking of the legal status of midwives and the fact that we are overseen by the medical board, which basically are our competitors and practice an entirely different style of prenatal care, maternity care. There is a law, or there's a bill right now that is looking for an author, and our district is one of the ones that CAM is asking for people to contact. I think it's the senator and you know, so I can put that on the Nozomi website, on the Nozomi Facebook page. And I don't know if you could put it on the San Diego.
Yeah, we can get it on there.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. They're trying to regulate kind of the middle part of San Diego.
Yeah,
to signatures.
It's what it is a bill that would take midwives out from under the medical board and create a midwifery board that would have a majority of midwives on it that would come up with practice guidelines and standards that are evidence-based and not medically based.
So we would like to police ourselves.
It would
basically
be
instead of have OBs, you know, oversee us from the medical board. We still, you know, we're fine going through the medical board for our license, but you can't have the pot who has the most money saying to the pot who has little money, oh no, you can't have any of that. And, you know, so one of the things that the midwives got on board and absolutely refused to give up was VBAC. It's like, oh no, we are not, because it's VBAC started with midwives. Mm-hmm. We're not about to give that up. And the consumer stood up and said, no, don't make us go to an OB.
Yeah.
So those are, you know, there's always going to be those little power struggles and little fights. Mm-hmm. But, and whoever thought that midwifery was political? It is. Oh my gosh, it's so political. It's crazy.
Can I just clarify one thing? Because I thought, so is it all breach that midwives can't deliver?
In the state of California, we are not allowed to knowingly assist a breech birth. So, however, if we show up and this baby's coming out butt first,
we can stay and help her, but we have to activate 911. So, which doesn't mean 911 gets to take over, because now we're primary care providers, they're secondary. It works really well.
Postpartum care. I've found a lot of moms saying, I couldn't get the baby out, it just wasn't working, you know, we'll get the baby out, you know. The idea of the calmness at the end. Mm-hmm. But the moms that go through traumatic events in their pregnancy and just can't get there, do you have, besides like, birthing from within and birth story listening, what's your opinion on like advice to give them before that happens?
So birth is not always what our dream is. Just like our babies, you know, we have this beautiful dream, oh, my baby's gonna do all this stuff, and baby gets born and we're like, okay. And sometimes we're like, oh yes, they're still gonna do everything. But by the time they hit about 13 to 15, you're like, oh, whoa, what happened? You know, I got this real person here, and it's kind of off from what I was thinking. So I like to approach birth in the same way. We talk with our families about that. You know, birth is a journey, and the baby has a decision to make too. And sometimes baby's decision, we don't know why they make that decision, but we have to trust that they know what they're telling us. And so, taking, you know, in a sense, telling mom, if you can get out of here and let your body do this, the birth works really well. But the more a woman is interfered with, the more the process is stopped and started and stopped and started, the more difficult the process is. Because birth doesn't happen here. This is where we cognitively think, and we're mammals. And mammals need to go back to that mammal side of the brain to allow the body to do what it's done for as long as we've been here. So, but what you're talking about also has to, so that's how you address it up front, is be willing to open the door and walk through that door and see what other doors open, because maybe other doors are going to open and you get to go through those, knowing that the baby has a choice too. But know that the journey is what you're doing together. And it's not the outcome in terms of which way the baby came out, whether it's, you know, the belly birth or the vagina. That's not the issue. But did the mom get listened to? Was she the center of the birth? Was she the one making the decisions and calling the shots? Or is somebody else doing that for her? Women have to be respected. Women know their bodies. And when that doesn't happen, women end up with trauma. So a woman may go into a birth deciding, I'm going to have a vaginal, uncomplicated, unmedicated birth, and end up with everything that they didn't want and feel fine about it.
Why? Because she was the leader.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, a woman may have all these interventions and be completely traumatized because she wasn't consulted, because she was told what to do or what was going to be done to her.
Mm-hmm.
So those are issues. Postpartum period, on the other hand, women have to have time. They have to process.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's too early for us to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for her. She needs to know she has support. And she needs to know that we're there for her, but we can't save her. It's a journey. It's part of her journey.
Yes. So, yeah, you, birthing classes, you've seen that would be really helpful for your clients, and just so that kind of triggered. Like,
so, birth, how many people, in you guys' realm of experience, how many families are you seeing that actually take birthing classes these days? Okay, there's a fair amount.
Wow.
I'm going to tell you, a lot of the millennials don't take birth classes.
Wow.
Because they can do everything online.
Wow.
I just wish there was an Amazon app for that, you know?
Did you see the difference?
Wow.
There's online childbirth.
Yes, I know.
I know.
Fall asleep. So what I find, is that women who are educated, women who know her choices, and even their partners, because sometimes partners are like way over there on that side, and they're just like, "You want to do what?" You know, I mean, sometimes we have dads come in, and I'll have to say, men partners are the worst, because they're just like, you know, I could never be pregnant, I could never have a baby, but you want to what? Oh, I don't think that's legal. It's like, no, home birth is legal. Yeah, really.
Right.
And sometimes insurance will even pay for it. And so it's an education process.
Right.
And then what we find is after the birth, the men are our best advertisers. Oh, you got to have a doula. You got to have my doula. You know, that's it. Really is. It's just about information.
And the thing that I find too, which is really nice about communities like this, it works almost the best when the same couple hears the same little piece of information from multiple people. So when they hear it from their chiropractor, hey, take a class. And then they hear from a doula that they interview, hey, take a class.
I'm not taking you on until you get a class.
Right,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
I do, exactly.
Yes.
And then you hear from another friend who says, hey, take a class. And then it finally hits them.
So it
works like that with everything. I think it works like that with midwifery. It works like that with hiring a doula. Like, they need to hear it from more than one location. So these types of things are nice because then you know where to go with that.
We encourage him to take lots of classes.
Yes.
Go take the hospital class.
Yes.
It's covered by your insurance. Oh, and by the way, hospital classes teach CPR for adult or for parents, which, you know, they're kind of like, oh, and they have the car seat class and they have the preterm labor class.
Yes.
Take all those classes if you have the time to do that. They're very informative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they teach, and clients come in and teach me things. I'm like, you got that from the class? Wow. Okay. Maybe I should incorporate that.
Oh, no, I was just thinking, you know, one of the differences really, you know, not all midwives, obviously, like, we're all kind of cut from the same cloth. I mean, it's a calling, but we don't all practice the same, you know, as you, like, you know, personalities and where we all kind of, you know, came from. We were doulas, you know, we've acupuncturists as well, you know, but I think also part of, to answer partly of your question too, part of it is the actual prenatal care itself.
Mm-hmm.
We spend 45 minutes to an hour with each family. Most midwives are going to be home birth midwives. 10 to 15 minutes, you might get 20 or 30 if they're going to do labs on you.
Mm.
But most of it's like 45 minutes of conversation. What are we talking about? What's going on? Break it down. Last 15 minutes is the medical stuff.
Right.
Mm.
But again, you know, what we found also, we kind of played with it, like, well, let's try and get it down to 30 minutes, like, for a family. And our results and the family's results really weren't the same.
Mm.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we over time figured out, like, okay, spend more time with them. You do more work in the front.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Especially, it doesn't matter if moms have had a great birth or not so great birth the first time or two. Especially in those instances, though, they're able to at least kind of process some of that trauma.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, we recommend really doing the birthing from within, you know, if helping them really process, mom or dad, processing any trauma that they might have. But we've been able to enjoy much more easy, uneventful births because we worked with the families and we laugh with them, cry with them,
yeah.
We get angry with them, you know what I mean?
And
we have to spend the time, that's the thing.
And we love doulas because doulas play a whole different role that we are not able to. We are medical care providers, and when the push comes to the shove, I have to have my clinical hat on.
As much as I love this woman, I'm not in there stroking her hair or taking her focus when, you know, when we're trying to receive a baby. It just isn't going to happen.
Right.
And we know that. And I think it's important for us to know our limits also and to know when you all have a much bigger impact than we ever can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm curious. I know that we keep talking about the village. I think it's great. But as a doula, I've attended a lot of births at several specific hospitals that just eat my soul. And so I'm curious as to if San Diego Birth Network has any future plans, however distant they might be, to try to connect with the OBs and the doctors there to have discussions about this. And I know that it's, I know that it's tough, but as wonderful as it is in the community, like you said, not all women can afford a home birth. Not all women can afford. So instead of, I guess what I'm curious about is those women that can't afford it, is there anything that we can do or that City of Birth Network is doing to try to bridge those gaps, to work with not just the providers that like us and like the midwifery provider care model, but to maybe branch out and chat medical professionals to medical professionals to kind of help them understand what the difference is happening?
So that was one of my original goals with the Birth Resource Network, was how do we connect with the providers, because this is ridiculous. And I was a doula, and I'm going to tell you, every one of you that's a doula here, you have an inroad that none of the rest of us do, because you're in the field, you're with them. And so during my time of being a doula, I would connect with the physician. I didn't care if I thought they were a jerk or what. They were caring for one of my families, and I wanted my family to have the best. And so there are times you just get to schmooze.
Mm-hmm.
And so doulas, you have a huge impact there. And one of the things that I would do is after the birth, I would send them a nice thank you letter. I had physicians asking for my cards at a birth. And it happened more than once because they saw, oh, you're part of a team. And that's how they have to feel. They can't feel that another medical care provider is coming in to take their clients. I think it was 2002, Scripps had come down with a rule that they were no longer going to allow doulas in the rooms. Mm-hmm. And so me and Ann Fulcher went and negotiated with the director of obstetrics at Scripps La Jolla, and we saw their rule, and it was just like, we can say the doulas can't be here. And so we talked with them about, why would you do that? They make your job easier. So we had some negotiating, and then we actually got to go in and do in-services for the nurses. And I think coming from a doula who's a non-medical care provider, it paves a way that those of us who are care providers can't necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So personally, as a care provider, I try to connect with every physician I meet when we do a transfer. And if they don't like me, I don't care. I want my client to have the best care, and I will follow up. I will bend over backwards to do whatever I need to make that care provider feel that I've taken good care of this family, because I want them to pick up and do that same good care. And then, when we interact with them, then it's a whole different picture. They see us as an individual. So I think coming in from the aspect of, here, we're going to come and teach you how to do your job, can be very off-putting. But the doulas who are in that circle and doing these things, you have a huge input that little bits, you don't even imagine how little bits help. And I'm going to tell you one brief story, and I know I'm probably over time. So I was a doula. I got certified in 1997, but I had been a doula off and on for 20 years before. So in the 70s, when I had my first baby, I found the team. So I started with a family practice doc who had a very different idea than I did. So I'm like, I want the best for my baby. I'm going to have an OB. And I had a very nice office and machines that go bing. And I never saw the OB. I saw the nurse practitioner, and she was always on me about how much weight I gained or, what my pee looked like. And I was just like, oh, something is missing here. And I was the first in my group of people, my friends, to have a baby. So it was kind of like the pilot project, if you will. And so I just kept thinking, there's got to be something else. And so I heard that there were midwives who had just started practicing in hospital in the poor part of town, in South Phoenix.
And I'm like, okay, well, I live here. So let me go find out about these midwives. So my first visit, they spent 45 minutes with me in a hospital setting. And I just went, whoa, this is what was missing, women. And then the labor and delivery nurses taught our classes. That was awesome, because we knew some of them would end up being there. And my goal was to have an unmedicated birth, you know, first time. And wow, they helped me do that. Wasn't sure I could, and I knew what med I wanted if I could, you know, if I felt like I couldn't do this. But it was about education. And so those are the kind of things that you kind of bring full around. And that was when it dawned on me. It's like, I want to be a midwife, but I'm a mom now, so I'm going to be a mom first. And then sometime later in the future, I'll be a midwife. But it's those little things. So fast forward, 1997, working here at the hospital. One of my mentors is a certified nurse midwife, amazing woman. She runs the Medi-Cal clinic at Grossmont. She works with lots of moms who have drug issues, prison moms, our immigrant moms, areas where there is little service or no service. That's what she focused on. But she had a small home birth practice, and she brought me into that to work with her. And she was telling us about her master's program, which was birth positions through the years. And she had done her master's on all this birth ethnographic pictures and drawings, how to get a stuck baby out. So she ends up, a few years later, going to Lithuania with a OB team to teach the doctors there, because let's see, their numbers are worse than ours, but barely, to teach the OBs there how to get babies out. And so part of that team was the head anesthesiologist at Sharp Mary Birch, and his name is Dr. Pugh. I can say that because he's retired now. But I had attended many births with him there. And he was always very stodgy, and you know, his epidurals were the best, and everybody should have an epidural. And I was like, okay, whatever. So Susan ends up being on the plane with him, and they're flying over, and so she's trying to, you know, get to be friendly. And she's like, so, Dr. Pugh, tell me what you're going to discuss. And he's like, well, why do you care? And she's like, well, I don't want to step on your toes, and maybe we're going to be discussing similar things, because I'm going to be talking about comfort measures. And he's like, well, I'm talking about the epidural. And she's like, oh. Okay, well, that's great. But she caught his interest. What could comfort measures have to do with midwifery, really? He sat in on her talk, and she talked about how that in the pictures, ethnographically, down through the last couple thousand years from what we can find, when women had a stuck baby, there were some pictures where they would always have their foot against something. So we have pictures of Native American women with their feet against pegs that are on the ground. Mm-hmm. We have women in prehistoric Mexico time in the petroglyphs, and their feet are grounded. And so she was talking about how when you push on the instep of the foot, it releases the perineum and the baby can shift down. Mm-hmm. And so 2 years later, I'm at a birth. Dr. Pugh is the anesthesiologist. And he comes in and he says to the OB, you know, because they were trying to hurry and get this baby out, the heart tones weren't great. And he's like, he says to the OB, little tiny OB that looked like a teenager, and that's when I know I'm aging. And she's sitting there with her hair in a ponytail, and I'm just like, oh, gosh, you look 14. And he says to her in passing by, because he's about to adjust the epidural, he goes, you know, if you push on the instep of her foot like that, doula is right there, her baby's just going to come out. And she's like, oh, okay. And he walks on by, adjusts the, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, this is an ethnographic moment. This is a moment when something that was taught him a few years ago by somebody he couldn't accept at the time has now become part of what he's teaching other doctors. That's what we're looking for. And the OB looks at him again and goes, what? He goes, if you have your nurse come over here and push on her instep right here, just like the doula is, and that baby's just going to come out. And she's like, okay. And so the circulating nurse comes up, puts her foot on, you know, her hand on the foot, and the mom presses on the foot, and two more pushes, and the baby came out. So changes have to happen inside institutions, and you who are in those institutions right now make a difference. You're more powerful at it than we are coming in and trying to teach them something. I have a lot of thoughts. And for babies. And I used to think that I became a midwife to help women have choices. And when I was having some cranial sacral work done, it became really clear to me that I had been one of those stuck babies. Mm-hmm.
and that my mom was given twilight sleep, which I knew that, but I didn't know much about my birth. But I had been held up by 1 foot, and I remembered being in a cold, dark place, so a delivery room, being held up by 1 foot, and my back has always been off as a result of that. So that's the moment that I went, oh, I'm in this for babies.
Thank you.